The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to your Valentine's Views podcast for Monday, November 21st. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts if you're listening to us across the Big Blue View radio network. All right, Giants fans, Tony Del Genio here with me today. As always on Monday, to talk about the latest Giants game. This one, a really, really disappointing 31-18 loss to the Detroit Lions. Tony, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So as I said, Tony, this one, really disappointing game. In some ways, I think you could see this coming a little bit. There had to be a game somewhere along the line where things didn't go well. As I wrote last night, you know, teams don't go through a 17 game season and put their best foot forward, you know, each and every single Sunday. But this was a really disappointing day for the Giants, from the way that they played to all of the injuries that they suffered. What's your big takeaway?
Yeah, I think it's actually pretty amazing that the Giants haven't had a bad game yet, even when they've lost. I think they've been, you know, very competitive. You might say the Seattle game wasn't too good, but they were, you know, they were still tied in that game with 11 minutes to go. And the Dallas game, I thought they fought hard, just couldn't protect Jones enough and couldn't stop CeeDee Lamb when it counted. But they generally played tough in that game too. This is the first game that they really looked like they were off kilter on offense, on defense, and I want to say in coaching too. I thought this is the worst game that this coaching staff has had.
I would agree with you on all counts there, Tony. The issue that I have, and again, something that I wrote after Sunday's game, the issue that I have is, when you look at this team, it's amazing that they were 7-2. It really is, because this is not a complete team. This is not a dominant team. This is a team with, I think, as we've discussed, a very narrow path to victory. You know, path that includes running the football well, not making mistakes, controlling the pace of the game, controlling the clock, and relying on the opposition to make mistakes at the end of games. You get them out of that comfort zone, and we saw a little bit of the result on Sunday. They somehow, even though they lost, you know, two games prior to Sunday, managed to stay in that comfort zone for most of 9 weeks. And what I wonder is, was Sunday just a bad game? Which obviously it was a bad game, you know, or do we toss it out, or is it sort of a harbinger of things to come over the next 7 weeks?
So my feeling is that it's a little bit of both. It's tough to isolate one particular thing. I mean, obviously this game was a stinker. They did not play well in any of the three phases of the game. And as I said, I didn't even think that the coaching was very good in this game. Decisions that were made before the game and during the game, but at the same time, which I'm sure we'll get to, they're losing so many players to injury that they're down to a pretty bare bones roster in several parts of the team, and eventually that has to have some effects. And naturally, we all know, we've known this all season, that the worst part of their schedule, the toughest part of their schedule, is coming up for most of the rest of the season. And so there are all kinds of, I think, reasons why this could partially be a harbinger of what's to come. The other thing, which, and I can't say this definitively, is that, you know, now you've got 10 weeks of film. If you're an opposing coaching staff, you've got 10 weeks of film to understand what the Giants are doing and react to what they're doing, plan for what they're doing to shut it off. And I think, you know, you're seeing bits and pieces of that now. I think we certainly saw that in the Seattle game where Seattle's defense cut off the Giants read option offense, which, by the way, they came back with yesterday after it being put to bed for a little while, and they made some hay with that. That's great. But you just wonder to what extent teams now are cluing in on the Giants' tendencies. And then the question, of course, it's like a chess game. And so does the coaching staff see what's happening there and say, okay, here's our next move. What are we going to do differently than we did before? And I think that will have a lot to say about whether this is a harbinger of things or whether it's just a little blip in things that will go away, and maybe go away after Thursday when they've got a really tough game.
All right, Tony, let's talk about injuries, and those injuries bleed into some of what you were talking about with coaching and coaching decisions. Now, Brian Daboll and his staff have had a magic touch through 9 games. They've done a lot of things right. Sunday certainly didn't give me pause to think any less of Brian Daboll and his staff than I did previous to that. But Sunday, I thought that a couple of decisions that they made came back to hurt them. And, you know, first and foremost, we'll talk about injuries. The biggest injury that we know about, and this was not a coaching decision of any sort, but the biggest injury we found out Monday morning, Wandale Robinson is lost for the season to a torn ACL. Real shame. Robinson was in the midst of his best NFL game. Quality young player. But it's funny because he's 5'8" and 180, 185 pounds. And there was a point in Sunday's game where Patty Traina of Giants Country is sitting next to me in the press box. And I turned to her and I said, I love this kid. He's a really good young player, but I hold my breath every time he gets hit because he's so small. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, he got knocked out of bounds, got hit off balance, and he's done for the season. I feel bad for the kid, but at this point, I also wonder where the heck the Giants are going to get production out of the passing game.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure that particular injury had anything to do with his size in particular. I don't know, maybe a 6'4", 220-pound wide receiver wouldn't have been pushed in the same direction or something like that. But, you know, I mean, there are plenty of small receivers around the league. I was watching Sky Moore play for Kansas City last night. He's a kind of similar type of receiver to Wandale Robinson. I think it's a legitimate question over the long term as to whether a guy that size can stand the wear and tear. I'm just not sure about that injury last night. At any rate, you know, I think that a lot of it is bad luck. You know, I love him too. And I just say he was playing great last night, his first 100-yard game as a receiver, which may be the first 100-yard game that a receiver has had for the Giants. I don't know. I don't know whether
Sterling Shepard might be. I'm not sure. I'd have to go back.
Sterling Shepard reached 100 in game 1 when he had that 65-yard touchdown pass. But But certainly the Giants haven't had many 100-yard receivers. So, I mean, so the good news is that they finally used him extensively yesterday, which they really hadn't been doing. And he produced when they did, and he looks like a reliable receiving option. So I guess it remains to be seen whether he can hold up under the wear and tear of an NFL schedule when he comes back next year. Of course, the guy that he ostensibly replaced on the Giants roster that we thought was going to be that, that guy to give them that type of stuff had another hammy last night on Sunday Night Football, and we'll see how long he's out for.
So. Yes, the Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver who shall remain nameless has yet another hammy.
Yep.
And that, for all Giants fans out there, that is so, kind of, sort of, I guess, a reason to smile this morning.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the other injury that we have to talk about, and we don't know the extent yet of any of the other injuries. Brian Daboll wasn't giving information Monday morning, said guys were still undergoing tests, but the one that that goes right to the core of this Giants coaching staff making a mistake is the knee injury suffered by Adoree Jackson. And there was a report from Jordan Schultz that it's a sprained MCL. He could be out 3 to 5 weeks. No one has verified that yet at this point. I'm assuming or hoping at least that we get more information later today. But I understand coaches wanting to put their best players in positions to make plays, whether that's on special teams or wherever, but this was an injury that the Giants just couldn't afford. And for me, the even bigger shame of this is in the two games that we saw Adoree Jackson return punts, he showed no signs of being a dynamic playmaker as a punt returner. He showed no signs of being able to do any more than just catch the punt. And I hate going back to the Jason Sehorn injury, you know, returning a kickoff in a preseason game. There was talk the other, you know, in the press box on Sunday about Jabril Peppers getting hurt returning kicks for the Giants. Somebody's got to do it. But when your roster's as thin as this Giants roster is, maybe that's an indictment of the rest of the roster, but it just seems like a very, very dangerous decision by the Giants that really is coming back to bite them now.
Yeah, and I think this is a case where, you know, it's funny. Giants fandom makes all kinds of hot takes reacting to anything that goes on adversely for the Giants or anything that, that goes good, and everything is always magnified into some referendum on a player or on the team or something like that. And a lot of them are funny because they'll, you know, they can change 1 week later. This is a case where Giants fandom and Giants press, including people like you, were unanimous in saying before the game that this was a bad idea by Daboll to have him returning punts. And, you know, what are you thinking to have your best cornerback out there when you're already so thin at the defensive back positions? Why would you put your best cornerback out there to receive punts? Now, you know, oh yes, Richie James had that terrible game in Seattle, but then later on they were trying to make the point that, oh, it was because he had cotton sleeves on that game and he didn't have good enough grip on the ball and so on and so forth. You know, well, you know, he didn't have cotton sleeves on yesterday in the game. You know, why couldn't he be back there returning punts? And, you know, I'd rather have him fumble another one if he really is that bad at doing it. I'd rather have him fumble another one than what happened. And so, I mean, I think this is a case where I think the fans were ahead of the coaches. And I know of no one who thought that this was a good idea outside of the Giants building.
Yeah, the shame of it also is that I look at it, Richie James had a bad game and everyone under the sun wanted him replaced as punt returner. A lot of Giants fans wanted him cut. But the reality of it is Richie James has been a good punt returner, kickoff returner for the majority of his career. He's done it for a while, and he probably still was the best option on the 53-man roster that the Giants had. When I look at Adoree Jackson, I'm looking at his career statistics returning punts, which he hadn't done since 2019 before the Giants put him back there. And he's an average punt returner. He averages, I think, 8.4 yards per return. There's nothing special about him as a punt returner. I could understand it maybe back in the day, Patrick Peterson, early in his career, top-tier cornerback, but was also an incredibly dangerous punt returner, one of the best in the league at that. And that's an obvious risk. And yet he was showing you that there was benefit to that risk because he could make game-changing plays as a punt returner. Adoree Jackson was showing no signs of being able to do anything but catch the football.
Yeah.
And you could put a lot of guys back there to just fair catch the football,
mm-hmm.
and or catch it and step out of bounds. You could put a lot of guys back there to do that. And it's just an injury that the Giants couldn't afford. Fabian Moreau went down during the game. The Giants were playing Nick McCloud, Rodarius Williams, and Cordale Flott. And the Lions were licking their chops, throwing the ball at Rodarius Williams. He couldn't defend anybody. He couldn't tackle anybody. And that's a little bit unfair to Rodarius Williams, because it's a little unfair for me to criticize him because he's been out for more than a year after suffering a torn ACL. He's barely had any practice time. He's had no contact. He hasn't had to tackle anybody in almost a year and a half. So what happened is obviously what was going to happen. And it's unfortunate because those are probably your three cornerbacks on Thursday night against the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea how Wink Martindale is going to run the defense that he wants to run with those three guys at corner, with Dane Belton. And it's pretty clear, although the Giants love Belton as a safety, it's pretty clear that they see him as a developing player and not a fully developed player, because they limit his snaps on a week-to-week basis. They were using Jason Pinnock a lot. They take Belton off the field quite a bit. So it's obvious there's situations they don't want to expose him to. But really, for me, this whole situation was an unforced error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely with that. As for Wink Martindale, last year he went through this with the Baltimore Ravens.
And got himself fired.
got himself fired. That's right. What he did as the season went on, Marcus Peters went down with an injury for the season. And then later on, I think Marlon Humphrey went down too, if I remember correctly. And as the season went on, he did play less cover one. Cover two or two man, basically cover two, cover four, cover six, defenses than he had for most of the previous 3 years. And so I think even someone like Wink Martindale, who wants to be super aggressive, sometimes may recognize that, you know, well, discretion is the better part of valor, and I better have two guys back there all the time. Of course, when you're using your safeties as cornerbacks, who plays safety, right? The Giants are so depleted at defensive back that it's really going to be a challenge. But I think that's probably what's going to happen. We're going to see a slightly less aggressive defense than we've seen from him all year, especially, I think, against the Cowboys, with a team that has very dangerous receiving weapons. And frankly, you know, Dak is a more mobile quarterback than Cooper Rush was, who the Giants saw last time. And so you can imagine that they'll maybe take a stance of trying to confuse him with coverages rather than confusing him with blitzes so much. But who knows? We'll find out in a few days.
Right. And the other, what I will term unforced error by the Giants, I think it might have been the very first time Daniel Jones dropped back to pass. The other unforced error that we saw, and I love the guy. I love Shane Lemieux. You know, he's a good guy to talk to. He works hard. He tries hard. He's an aggressive player. He's gone through a lot the last couple of years, and I'm glad to see him, you know, back on the roster. But it became evident in one pass blocking snap on Sunday that Shane Lemieux should not have been in the starting lineup on Sunday. That is another complete, total unforced error by the Giants. And I get the fact that Brian Daboll and Bobby Johnson, the offensive line coach, love Lemieux. They would have been in favor of drafting Lemieux with Buffalo a couple of years ago. They were excited about coaching. You know, Bobby Johnson was excited about having Lemieux, and they got him on the field at the first possible opportunity that they could get him on the field. But he very, very clearly was not ready to play NFL football on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was pretty obvious on the TV broadcast as well, because I can't remember, was it the second play from scrimmage that Jones dropped back, and Aleem McNeil just bowled him back toward Daniel Jones, and it was so obvious that he was having a tough time. And after I saw that, then I started trying to specifically watch him on a lot of the dropbacks, and he was getting beaten a lot on the dropbacks. On the one hand, I mean, it's interesting. If you're the Giants coaches taking over this team, are you almost uncomfortable that the Giants have gotten to 7-2 and are putting themselves in position for a playoff run, because you're trying to develop players and understand what you have and so on and so forth, so that when you get a guy who comes back and you don't have, you know, an obvious stud to put in there at left guard, you say, well, let's start him, give him a chance and see what he can do. I can almost sympathize with that, but I'm not sure that I would have let him go more than maybe just the first quarter before I made the change, because I didn't think it took that long to make the assessment. They waited until halftime to switch to Azudu, and so Azudu I'm not sure, you know, why they let it go that long before they made the change, because they got themselves into a hole by halftime.
Right. I'm not going to be critical of Lemieux, because I don't think it was fair to him to be out there.
Yeah.
But I remember studying Aleem McNeil a couple of years ago prior to the draft, and I liked him. I thought he was a guy that could be an adequate NFL defensive tackle, middle round type draft pick. But Aleem McNeil is an adequate player, but they made him look like an all pro. He had 4 quarterback hits in the first half. He ended up, you know, he had that sack. He had 3 tackles for loss, and I think however many four quarterback hits or whatever it was. And I looked at his career stats this morning. He had never had more than 1 quarterback hit or 1 tackle for loss in a game prior to Sunday, and that just tells you, you know, how far Shane Lemieux was from actually being ready. So that's another mistake. And, you know, it's maybe not game plan, it's not play calling, but just a mistake in personnel usage and another unforced error by a coaching staff that's done almost everything right so far.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think every Giants fan will agree with that. Because, and if you look at Giants Twitter, it's kind of fun to watch a Giants game while you're following along on Twitter. And right after that first play that McNeil blew by Lemieux, the Twitter was just lighting up, was like, got to get Lemieux out of there and so on. And I thought that was an overreaction. But then by the end of the first quarter, I said, well, you know what? They're right. He's getting beat consistently. If I can just look at the flip side of things, and of course, this was a move made out of necessity and not so much by choice, but after Tyree Phillips went down and they put Matt Parrott in there for the first time, other than at those I think jumbo tight end formations that they had been running the past couple of weeks. But Matt Parrott played the rest of the game at right tackle, as far as I know, and I wasn't watching him every play. I saw one play where he didn't do a good job, but for the most part, I thought Matt Parrott looked adequate. And I got a little satisfaction out of that because I had been puzzled the last 2 years by a guy who looked in 2020 as if he could be a possible starting offensive tackle for the Giants. He handled Chase Young pretty well in one game and so on and so forth. And then all of a sudden he just fell out of favor and looked like he was someone who was out the door and might never play for the Giants again. So I'm very interested to see whether with this coaching staff and this offensive line coach, Bobby Johnson, whether they can make him into a useful right tackle, which would give them at the very least a really nice backup to use. So I was encouraged by that yesterday. The interior offensive line, though, obviously
disaster. It's a mess
this year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even Mark Lewinsky on the other side, again, he has a reputation as being a better run blocker than a pass blocker, but yeah, he has real deficiencies as a pass blocker, and Feliciano, who also got hurt yesterday, has been adequate at best, but nothing special. Again, the upside is that we got to see Nick Gates actually playing center for a change, and so those are the positive things I try to take from a game that had very few positives to look at.
Yeah, absolutely. I enjoyed seeing Matt Parrott play reasonably well on Sunday. The only thing I'll say about that is I thought that Matt Parrott should have been starting every single week last year. I thought that this was a young, talented, developing player who was mishandled by the previous head coach. And I will be happy to see him play, and play fairly well. I'm assuming that he's going to have to play Thursday night against Dallas. Not an easy assignment for anyone, but if he plays well, I've had the opportunity to talk to him a couple times, and he's a nice young man. He's a good guy to talk to. Seems like a guy who wants to play well. And I'll feel good for him if he does that. Anyway, Tony, let's talk playoffs. The Giants, obviously, before Sunday, were looked at as a team. Most of these prognostication sites that do probabilities had the Giants anywhere from 75% to 90%. Probability of making the playoffs, based on however they did their formula. And this morning, those probabilities are down to anywhere from 50 to 65%. Honestly, I think Sunday's game, it showed so many of the weaknesses that the Giants have. They got hurt by so many of these injuries. And the schedule is so difficult the rest of the way. The Giants have by far the hardest schedule of any NFL team going forward. As much of a feel-good season as it's been for the Giants, it's going to be hard for them to make the playoffs. It really is, because it's going to be hard for them to get to 10 wins, which I think is what they're going to have to do.
Yeah, I think obviously they've got a much more difficult road after yesterday, not just because of the loss. You know, standing at 8-2 would have put you in a much more favorable position going forward, but also because of the injuries and just how the roster is continually being depleted. I'm not as pessimistic as you are, because I'm not sure that 10 wins are going to be required, because if you look at the rest of the NFC, the rest of the NFC is actually pretty awful. Dallas is obviously on the rise, and I think it would be a miracle if the Giants won on Thursday night the way things are right now. They're hitting Dallas at a very bad time the way Dallas is playing, and they're hitting them at a very bad time considering who they have to put out there to match up against Dallas. And so let's say we chalk that one up as a loss. I mean, Washington, who they get twice, is a very funny team. They've got talent, and I think they're better off at quarterback with Heinicke than they were with Carson Wentz. And so I think they have a better chance to beat the Giants that way. But the Giants always play Washington tough, and I'm not convinced that Washington is a very well-coached team. And so I still give them a chance to at least split those games. And then you have games, Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia looks like they're much more talented than the Giants, but just yesterday, Philadelphia had to score a touchdown in the final minute just to beat the Colts, who have had such a terrible season up to now. And the Vikings, right, who are supposedly this great team, were absolutely embarrassed. I mean, the Vikings look like a team with no heart yesterday against Dallas. And that's kind of the reputation I think that team under Kirk Cousins has, is that it's a team that doesn't fight back that much. I mean, they did it the previous week against Buffalo beautifully, and then yesterday they just laid down and died against Dallas. And so, yeah, the Dallas game, the Philadelphia games, I don't think the odds of those are very great, but I still hold out hope for the Colts game and the two Washington games. And if they can get two of those, they get to 9-8. And 9-8 might do it in the NFC, because there just aren't many good teams around.
That's true. And I don't mean to be overly pessimistic. And look, they're 7-3. They're playing meaningful football games in Thanksgiving. They're going to play meaningful games the rest of the way. They've already had, in many ways, a successful season. They've already established that they have a good front office. They have a good coaching staff. They have some really, really solid building blocks. For me, a playoff berth is a bonus. It's sort of having their cake and eating it too, or it's having an extra piece of pie on Thanksgiving, or whatever, however you want to put it. I mean, they've got 7 games left. It's absolutely possible they can get to 9 wins, 10 wins. It's possible. I'm just looking at the numbers and the difficulty of what they have remaining in front of them, and it's not easy. It's not as there are Giants fans who are dreaming about Odell Beckham and dreaming about a Super Bowl run just a few days ago, and I guess my point is, it's not going to be nearly as easy as many people thought that it would be. It's not nearly as much a guarantee that this team makes the playoffs as some people thought it might be.
Yeah. And I think yesterday's game is what completely changes that, not just because of the numbers, but because you lost a winnable game against a mediocre, Detroit is not a bad team. If you've watched them during the year, and I've seen them a few times, and they play well. I think the big surprise yesterday is that the Giants were so inept on offense against their defense, because Detroit's defense is what has been holding that team back all year. Detroit's offense is actually one of the better ones in the NFL. I mean, amazingly, they put up points in the majority of games they played, although they hadn't recently. It's their defense that has been just really, really terrible all season. And so to watch them, the thing about yesterday's game, I think that was most concerning is that on both sides of the ball, the Lions line dominated the Giants line. The Lions defensive line absolutely dominated our offensive line. And our defensive line, frankly, didn't do much against their offensive line, which is maybe less of a surprise because Detroit's offensive line is pretty good. But still, that was where the Giants really, really lost that game, I thought. They just were beaten up on both sides of the line yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think defensively for the Giants, they're going to have to rely more on that front four with all of the injuries in the secondary. And right now, you question whether they can, but on the flip side, on the offensive side, I think we've known all year that the interior of that offensive line is the place where the Giants still have work to do. That weakness really, you know, sort of came home to roost on Sunday. The Lions really took advantage of the difficulties that the Giants had up the middle. The other thing is that without Daniel Bellinger, the Giants don't have any blocking tight ends. They've had to go to the jumbo tight end package with Nick Gates. They've been going to the 8 offensive lineman package. When they use the 3 tight ends, they've been taking the tight ends off the field and using the 8 offensive linemen. And because of the way that the game went on Sunday, they didn't have 8 offensive linemen to put in there. All of those guys were playing. Mm-hmm. So that part of their run game package was taken away from them. And as I've said, the concerning thing for me all along is the Giants have a narrow path to victory. The game has to be played a certain way. And yesterday's game was evidence to me. People have asked, is it sustainable? Can they win another way? Can they win a shootout game? Can they win a game where they have to rely on Daniel Jones? To me, it was more evidence that for the Giants to win, the games have to be played a certain way. They certainly can against Dallas or Philly or Indianapolis or Washington or whoever. But the struggle for the Giants, to me, is because of their lack of talent in some areas, because of their injuries, because of the weaknesses in certain areas that we've known about all along. If the game isn't played in the way the Giants want it played, then they're at a huge disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And they're going to be at a disadvantage in, I'd say, at least half of their games going forward. And then the question is, can they pick up a couple in the games where they've really got a fighting chance? And, you know, that sets up the home game against Washington in 2 weeks. Although actually, frankly, I like to see the Giants on the road now rather than at home, because every time they're at home, somebody goes down with an ACL injury on the MetLife Tour. And so, it's amazing, right? There are four of the rookie class plus Sterling Shepard this year. And maybe I've missed one. I don't know, but that's at least 5 players who've gone down this year, all of them at MetLife, which is just, absolutely amazing.
Crazy. All right, Tony, thank you very, very much for the time today. Have a great Thanksgiving. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you get to see lots of family and have a great day.
You too, Ed. Thank you.
All right, Giants fans, thank you as always for listening. Have a safe and happy Thanksgiving as well. Please remember, take care of each other, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.